The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Open line on Man in Line today through till 1 o'clock. Till 66 13 68. Text 166 177. WhatsApp, same number. Or email studio at manxradio.com. Well, TT25 is over and done with now. Shame about the senior race, but, well, safety is paramount. Anyway, it's not too long. 700 starts 4 weeks today. Drew. 4 weeks today, the sun, and actually 4 weeks today is also Timwell Day. So that'll be interesting on the day. If any of the politicians dash down in their top hat and tails or pretty dresses to the Southern 100. So anyway, that's on the way soon. And anything else you want to talk about? It could be the TT. It could be stuff over that happened over TT. Tomorrow we've got another big cruise liner coming. I think it's a massive one tomorrow. It's the New Staten Dam, which will be with us. 2,500 passengers and 1,000 crew. So there'll be a lot of tourists around Douglas, certainly, heading around the Isle of Man. Any thoughts on that, and also the thought about having the fun fair here for longer than TT? And whatever else is on your mind, because we're open line till one, and Barry's first with us today. Hi, Barry.
Hello, Andy. Good afternoon to you.
What's on your mind, Barry?
Taxis. Okay. It's always taxis these days.
Yeah.
Taxis. Yeah, so the story that the Isle of Man newspaper originally ran, and then Manx Radio took it on over the weekend. And I haven't even gone to work this morning because I just, as nervous as I am right now, I just had to phone in about this because this is just kind of unacceptable, really, from the RTLC. And I shall tell you, I'll try to explain to you the reasons as to why. And there's a little bit I want to get through because I need to do a little bit of history on this one.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
So I've been a taxi operator, full-time taxi operator, for 20 years. And around about 2003, 2004, the Isle of Man government, in conjunction with the Isle of Man Constabulary, ran a scheme in Douglas called Project Centurion. And that was back in the times where we had nightclubs running all the way pretty much from the top end to Lock, all the way down past the Queen's as far as Summerland. So, you know, there was a lot of places at that time where taxis could operate at night. And I will say that in the 20 years that I have been a taxi operator, there's probably around about an extra 8 to 10 taxis being licensed solely for the Douglas area. So essentially, I was having a little think about this, but over the last 20 years that I've been in this job, I think it's fair to say that Summerland had gone just before I started. But Paramount City has gone, Collars has gone, Jimmy B's has gone. With that went the bowling alley and the actual Casamona Hotel, as we know. Breeze I think it was called, it was Breeze, and then there was Collars at the Hilton. But the story is basically that nighttime trade, nightclubs, venue as well was another one. All these places are gone. So we have less and less and less places to apply for hire. We have more taxis, and we have a difficult situation. There's been a loss of taxi ranks, actually, over the years as well, because back in time when Safeway was Safeway, and I think another shop might have took it over after that, there was also the taxi rank along Market Street. There's been another few ranks. The old one at the bus station was lost. So there's been a loss of taxi ranks. There's been an increase in taxi numbers, and there's been an absolute decimation of the nighttime trade. So essentially, we have a mathematical equation that simply doesn't work out here. Now, I haven't had time to go on and get the exact numbers off the RTLC website, which unfortunately is not updated regularly enough these days anyway. There hasn't actually been any real updates regarding meetings or annual reports on there for several years. But by my reckoning, and I think I want to stay on the underside of this as opposed to the overside, I think there's 98 ply-for-hire cars operating within the Douglas and East District. And we also know about the private hire cars that hang around in car parks, et cetera, et cetera. But taxis, the ones that have the roof signs and the ones that are licensed to ply for hire to sit on the streets in Douglas to hail down, there's about 98 of them by my reckoning. And Victoria Street rank alone before 6 o'clock, there's six spaces. And some of the taxis on there insist on having big gaps, which essentially drops that down to five spaces. So it could be, look, I'm not going to say at any point that there's 98 taxis working in Douglas, for instance, at 12:15 or whatever it is now on a Monday afternoon.
Yeah.
But the reality is that there could be. There could be. And at weekends, there probably well is. But you have got a situation whereby before 6 o'clock, you've got five or six spaces, and after 6 o'clock, the loading bay turns into a taxi rank, and then I think it provides another five, but I've not really looked at it very much. We're going to call it 11 spaces, but what I want to do is stay on the underside of all of this, because I don't want to get criticised.
Yeah.
Now, so what I want the listeners to try to do here is just to imagine a scenario. So you imagine a company, right? This is how I look at this. Imagine a company starting business in Douglas, and employing 98 people to work within that business. But they have a room, and in that room, there's six desks and six chairs. And 92 of them staff have to, like, queue outside the door and down onto the street in order to try and find somewhere to sit. So essentially, it becomes like a dogfight as to who can work and who can sit and who can actually earn a living.
Yeah.
Because the reality is if you can't get into that building to sit down, they ain't going to pay you. And the taxis have a job to do, because since COVID, a lot of the taxi operators, the ply for hire operators, as I am, we don't work with the service providers anymore. Telecabs Elegance, there's only two now. So that's how we make our money. So we have a less space to operate, and there's more of us trying to kind of earn money in a specific way, because a lot of us simply cannot see the value in paying the service providers money every week, because they don't have as much work as they used to do either, in my opinion. So imagine that scenario. So you've got six spaces, 98 taxis, trying to get onto six spaces. And then you've got to obviously remember what I said, that we've lost all of the ranks. So in the last 4 weeks or 5 weeks or 6 weeks, I've sent three emails, which I could have come on here before and said this, but I didn't want to. But today I'm going to say this, because this has to be once again exposed for what it is. I've sent three emails, two emails the same. One was the original one, nice and friendly and polite, and then I sent that back again, and then I've sent another one to the DOI minister requesting that to ease some of the pressure on Victoria Street, we get the rank on Market Street outside the old vaccination hub back. That was our rank. They took that away from us. But no response whatsoever. The chief minister has been very, very, very kind. He has come back to me a couple of times and said, I'm trying, but I'm still waiting to try and find out, I guess, what the DOI minister is going to do. Now, I don't know what the DOI minister is doing, but something has to be done regarding this. So I've had nothing come back from the DOI minister, and I'll continue trying, as indeed I do in the back seat all the time. But that's it. But that rank on Market Street would alleviate or would sort of remove or release some of the pressure that's actually happened on Victoria Street. Now, I reckon that there's a chance that some of this news story possibly has come from me, because the only taxi that I've ever seen actually parked, as in the news story, parked on a taxi rank, is actually me, because I am a blue badge holder. And I do know that I try to avoid going on on disabled spaces as much as I possibly can, because I have this feeling in my mind that the general public think that taxi drivers probably never are unfit enough that they might need to occasionally use a disabled space.
Yeah.
So I try not to, but sometimes I really struggle to walk because of this ongoing problem I've got with my ankles. So I have parked on a taxi rank. But the problem where I have with this is that the RTLC themselves have thrown around this word, parking, like the taxi trade are deliberately parking on the disabled bay. Like they're not. Because there's been a system in place, it's an unofficial system. But because you've got all these cars, all these taxis basically waiting around one central hub where there's a few bars around Victoria Street now, there's been an unofficial system whereby the six spaces of official taxi rank, then the loading bay becomes a taxi rank. Then there's been kind of almost like a waiting system that's kind of developed in at the top of Victoria Street outside Colburn's, where two or three cars can get in there and just wait. And they do move if somebody needs to get into them spaces that has a blue badge. And I've seen that happen myself. Then they tend to queue around the back of Ridgeway Street. Then they queue all the way back into King Street. And for some strange reason, the poor people like I am, who are out there trying to make a living, become the bad guys because the government themselves can't be bothered to do anything about the nighttime economy.
Barry, where's this come from? I mean, the RTL, the Road Transport Licensing Committee, as you say, if they haven't replied to you, I'm very surprised that they haven't replied to you, certainly.
Not the RTLC, no, the DOI minister hasn't responded to me yet.
Right, he's not. Did she acknowledge the fact that you'd sent an email?
Well, kind of and kind of not, because there was a different discussion going on regarding 20-mile-an-hour speed limits,
right.
And I just had to ping in there one day that I've sent an email, and there was a little bit of a response, but there's been nothing official, and therein lies the problem, Andy, actually. There's actually so much wrong with this, right, because the taxi ranks themselves are actually operated by the DOI. The RTLC is actually there supposed to be more managing licensing, and they're also supposed to be there on sort of like disciplinary matters if somebody puts in a complaint about an individual driver regarding mannerism, regarding fares, regarding anything. But for some reason, you've got the DOI currently sitting back doing absolutely nothing to help taxi people trying to make a living, and you've got the RTLC almost stepping in to try to do the police job and the DOI job, which doesn't make any sense because I can't see anything within the 2001 Act that gives the RTLC any right or reason to be getting involved in so-called parking matters, which actually aren't. They're actually waiting matters for people trying to earn a living.
So anything been said officially about the Chester Street rank, the taxi rank that used to be outside the old ShopRite?
Well, I will say that I seem to have a little bit of support from the Chief Minister. But the Chief Minister is actually my local MHK because I'm sitting here in glorious Kirkmichael at the minute. But the DOI Minister has come back with nothing, only to say that, well, I think she said that there was some discussion, but that was only just a brief little sort of a 5, 6, 7, 8 worder on the bottom of a story on Facebook regarding 20-mile-an-hour limits. There's nothing official come back. And you see, but therein, this is the thing, right? Because I could come on here and have a whole negative conversation to say that the whole thing is a disaster. But what this is an opportunity now. This is an opportunity for once and all to try and solve this. Because I'm not so sure that the government have any real will or want to actually worry about trying to improve the nighttime economy in Douglas. But the problem we have is that of course it's not good for me, for my 97 colleagues in Douglas trying to get onto a taxi rank in order to pick up a fare that may go £5, £20 or somewhere else out the road. But we need spaces. We have to have spaces to apply for hire because that's what we do. We're paying license fees. It's not, we're not getting a free ride out there. You know, we're out there paying our licensing fees, paying everything we have to pay, and having a taxi on the road is expensive. We need at least probably 20 spaces somewhere, and my feeling is there's going to have to be a drastic decision. Whether that means now that we get the whole of Victoria Street 20-25 spaces to apply for hire, that's what we need. And as crazy and as kind of mad as that sounds, unless we get our spaces, this is going to continue.
Yeah.
We as a trade didn't insist that the RTLC over its 24 years of infinite wisdom should register however many hundreds of private hire operators to join forces with the 98 taxi operators within Douglas. That's what they've done, because you only see the apply for hire cars. You don't see all the private hire cars that are also trying to get the same bite of the cake parked in car parks all over Douglas.
Yeah.
Is the taxi trade have... Go on.
Is the sea terminal any use to you?
No.
And why
no,
is why
I
is
guess
that?
You want me to explain why?
Yeah.
Well, because it's only any good when the boat comes in. I 90% of my work comes from the Douglas taxi ranks, because that's what taxis are. Like, taxis were traditionally vehicles, public passenger vehicles, that essentially are there to be hailed down, instant response, pick up and go off taxi ranks. The only reason why taxis work through service providers is because of the lack of work on the streets. So I ain't going to be sitting around the sea terminal apart from when the boat comes in, because I need to feed my family. You know, I'm under pressure.
Yeah.
Can't
you use the sea terminal? You said there's the place, spaces outside Colburn, there's King Street. Can you not use the sea terminal as a place to wait and then filter in from there?
From the sea terminal to Victoria Street?
Yeah.
No way, it's too far, isn't it? How'd you do that? It would never work. You'd have to go all the way along past the bus station, and how would you know when the space is there, and how would you know when there's not space there?
Well, I'm just investigating. Are there still spaces? Is there still that space opposite the bus station?
There is space opposite the bus station, but of course that is actually kind of it's actually on the wrong side of the road.
Yeah, it's facing the other way, obviously.
Facing the wrong way. So you have to, but you see, there's people, like, I've sat there before. The reality is, Andy, really and truly, for me to bring up my two children and pay my bills, I need to be out there earning somewhere between £60 and £100 a day average. That's on the lower end for me to continue paying my bills. And if I come home with less than that, I'm under real pressure to pay my bills. So I can't afford to be going out there taking a risk, sitting in places where I ain't going to pick anybody up. There's no point in me doing that. I need to be where the hub is. So what I suggest is the DOI and the RTLC, instead of the RTLC going out there making absolute kind of swaying statements, almost like trying to badmouth the taxi trade, they should be working with us, not against us. They get together with the DOI, probably for the first time in history, and they come up with some kind of a solution as to how on earth they're going to solve a situation whereby 98 taxis are basically almost like sort of like cattle penned into six spaces before 6 o'clock and 11 after 12. And if that means that we have to take up the whole of Victoria Street, which, yes, it sounds crazy, but the taxi trade wants to work with the police. We want to work with the DOI. We want the RTLC to work with us. And if they work with us, we'll work with them. But unless this is kind of fixed, and we have somewhere to work, and we can work safely and get on well with the public, this is going to go on and on and on. Because what's going to happen now, unfortunately, is, and I'm going to come off a minute because I know I've had too much of your time. What's going to happen now is those disabled bays where taxis used to wait, and if somebody came along, we would move. We're now scared to go into them. So where are we going to wait now? Like, where are we going to wait? We have nowhere to wait now. So we're either going to drive around and round and round and round in circles, or we're just not going to go to work at all.
Okay.
Right. Or we're going to continue to do what we do, and then we're going to get parking tickets, and then we're going to be up for disciplinary. So, like, it's a problem that's been emphasised, but there ain't no solutions coming forward from the very people who can fix it: the DOI, the police, and the RTLC. We're not the problem. We've been made to look like the problem. We're never the problem. All we are is good people out there trying to earn a living.
All right, Barry. Well, I'm glad you came on. I'm glad you raised the subject, and we'll wait to see. And it'll be certainly interesting to see what happens regarding the Chester Street bays, and also any response that you get from the minister. All right. Thank you
so much. Now I need to go and take my blood pressure tablet. Thank you.
Okay. Good to hear from you. If you're wondering what this is about, the Road Transport Licensing Committee says it's received complaints about taxis parking in disabled parking bays and on double yellow lines. It said taxis had reportedly been parking in disabled bays outside Colburn's in Douglas, and they pointed out that the only vehicles with a disabled parking blue badge may use the parking bays. That includes parking at weekends and after six. You can only use it with a blue badge, and they could be subject to further action, disciplinary action. If you've got any thoughts on this, and of course, a taxi is something that you only need when you need it, but there are lots of people who operate plates and operate to taxis and ply for hire whose living it is. And Barry indicates there is something preventing that living being made. And principally, it is the loss of those spaces outside what was the immunisation hub on Chester Street. Call it whatever you want, ShopRite, Lipton's before that, Safeway. So we'll see. David's on now. Hi, David.
Hi, Andy. I just wanted to bring... I was thinking the other day about who voted for the 20-mile-an-hour policy coming forward to make it into law.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about... And I've left a message with the Council of Ministers at the Cabinet Office, and I hope that people around the island who have MHKs, who are ministers in their constituency ring their minister up and say, Minister, when did you discuss this at the Council of Ministers forums when they meet regularly? And what was your vote? Did you vote for it or against it? And we can get some clarity who started this off. I'm not blaming the lady for Cedral Douglas there, but we need to find out who started this off and then draw to their attention to that the minister and all the members in the department are carrying on works which are not sanctioned yet and have no permission to be done. More poles are going in. People keep talking to me about this pole is going here, pole is going there, and they're in the wrong positions, so forth. We were promised by the minister to have consultation on it and have some discussion with not only the public, but with the local authorities as well. It's not happening. Can I mention another one, Andy, too, just quickly, too?
Yep.
What is Mr. Hooper on about in Ramsey wanting to charge a visitor's tax in the Isle of Man? Does he not know? Lots of people are struggling to get people to come to the Isle of Man. Okay, we've had a couple of good weeks when hundreds of people have been coming here. Can you imagine if they find out we're going to then start putting a tax on them to come here? They must be laughing at us.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll find out. It's obviously something that is put forward. It's something that he obviously thinks should happen.
Well, I hope these other members within government and the council of ministers just say, and get them on a straight line and say, listen, you're supposed to be there to protect the island, increase the island's revenue streams, you know, not in a way we're going to crucify people coming on holiday.
Okay.
Shouldn't happen.
All right.
See you, boy.
Good to hear from you. Thanks for that. And Julian's with us now. Hi, Julian.
How you doing?
Very well today, thanks. Oh, I just got to read this first. It was from WhatsApper 528, just said, regarding the taxi driver, taxi drivers have had a hard time recently. The poor fella had desperation in his voice, so good luck to him, and thanks for giving him a voice. Well, that's what it's all about. Your story, it's your voice on Man in Line. You're on, Julian.
Yeah, you know, I could hear that as well. I'm a bit puzzled by something with all this. How is it that Opel, O-P-U-L, that we're seeing on every tour bus and God knows what, and the TT sponsorship, they've been buying up all the taxi companies. So why is that?
Well,
it's so difficult to...
Yeah, I just think, I mean, certain taxi companies, I mean, a lot of them have merged recently, haven't they? And obviously, I think some of the taxi company owners were getting on a bit in years, and they've obviously just decided to swoop around. I don't know whether, I mean, there was a rumour, and I don't know whether this is skeet, somebody messaged me over the weekend, that somebody was trying to introduce something like Uber, an app on the Isle of Man for taxis. This may not be part of it.
Yeah, possibly. But talk about a meteoric rise. I mean, Opel was only set up on Companies House on the Isle of Man a year ago. Several different companies. So the Jet Centre, I think. You've got several hotels on Douglas Promenade.
Yeah.
You've got all this, all these tour buses doing the rounds. It's a very, very fast, shall we say, transition to this company.
Well, they're obviously they're obviously very ambitious.
Yeah, but you know, it just seems incredibly fast that almost all our transport, whether it be Jet Centre, tourist buses, taxis, it's all about transport, and it's quite a controlling interest in one company, that, isn't it?
Well, we'll wait and see what happens.
Yesterday's Perspective programme with Chair of Manx Utilities, John Wannenberg.
Yeah.
Just a couple of thoughts on what was said. He mentioned that some of the board members of the MUA are international members with experience in Brazil and Spain, for example. Just wonder if those board members might like to come on and explain how Brazil's domestic electricity price is not 29 pence like the Isle of Man, but 7.8p per kilowatt hour. That's 72% cheaper than we pay. And if we're talking about Spain, as a consequence as well, Portugal suffered the largest power cut in European history in April. And the high percentage of renewables in their energy mix was implicated in the total collapse of an electrical grid supplying 50 million people. Which, of course, then brings me on to another point that he made when he said that the Cairvy wind farm is the right thing to do from a business perspective. I'd like to see the details of that business perspective, how the taxpayer-funded Alleman government are now going to become effectively Ørsted for the first time in history in any country with no experience. No doubt we're going to have to subsidise this wind farm, like all, every other wind farm has been subsidised. And then we, the taxpayer, are going to not only take the risk, but we're going to have to pay it back as well. I don't kind of get that business model, do you, Andy?
Well, remember, these are very clever people. They're in that position. They must know what they're doing, Julian.
Well, you know, this brings me to a question. My understanding is that the argument is that we will reduce our dependence on the gas at Pullrose by putting up these wind turbines. Is that right? That's kind of the argument, isn't it?
Well, they talk about energy security often.
So they say, oh, we'll save X number of millions. Thing is, though, Pullrose, we know it's called a CCGT. Now, that CC at the start means combined cycle.
Yeah.
So what that means is you've got two big, powerful gas turbines that you turn up and down, but a bit like a condensing boiler, they're not letting the exhaust heat go up out the chimney. What they're doing is they've got a steam engine in there as well, which effectively gives you clean 24/7 20 megawatts of electricity from the free heat that would otherwise have just been thrown out the chimney from those two gas turbines in the hall there.
Yeah.
So if you start turning down Pullrose, what are we going to end up with? We're going to end up with an intermittent 20 megawatts of wind, aren't we? We're going to lose, if you turn down the gas, you're going to lose the heat, and then that steam engine probably will have to be turned off.
Well, you have to keep it going to a certain extent. You can't turn it off. It's like the energy from waste plant. You can't, if you turn it off completely, it takes a while to cool down, and it costs a fortune to start it again. So I think that they'll have to keep some element of the, as you say, that closed circuit gas turbine, basically two big jet engines in there. They'll have to keep them going, which means even if we don't need the power, we'll have to keep some element of Pullrose still turning along.
Yeah, but I think there has to be a certain amount to keep the heat up. You
of
know,
course.
It's a bit like keeping the kettle on the boiler.
Yeah,
you haven't got the pressure in that steam. So are we sacrificing really green energy, actually, if you think about it? I mean, you know, it's like, you know, you see you get your 99% on gas and oil boilers now because, of course, they recondense and use the exhaust heat to heat the water further. So we're going to lose that for this. And then, of course, you've got all the other side effects of all this, all the rewiring. Instead of having a hall in Douglas producing the power, it's going to be 14 miles away or whatever it is. So you're going to have to run cabling and substations and all the rest of it.
Well, this is, they've worked all this out. They tell us this is how it's going to work. They tell us, I mean, they've not told us how much the price of electricity is going to be. They've not even said it's going to be cheaper. So we can draw any conclusion from that. But what they say is, this is the way of the future, and this is what's going to happen, Julian.
But this business that he's talking about of doing it, 30-year lifespan is what they're reckoning. There's no wind farm in the world that hasn't had a trigger's brush on the replacing pretty much everything. So it's not really the same as just having it running all the time. And then you've got this improbable load factor or how often it's going to be. Nobody's ever quantified. They talk about an average speed, but, you know, it's like going into town. You might go in on a Sunday morning and get into town quick, but then on other days, you know, it goes slowly or you know, you decide to turn back because of the queue. So,
these
averages.
Yeah, the thing is that the public, I mean, we, the people who actually use the electricity and, bluntly, the people who pay for the electricity, I would hazard a guess that the majority of people couldn't care less where their electricity comes from. They just want it as cheap as possible. So, and really, most people don't care about subsidies or, you know, this, that, and the other financial model of it all. They just want electricity, and they'd rather it wasn't more expensive. So, presumably, the politicians, the civil servants, the people at Ørsted or whoever's going to be operating the onshore or the offshore, presumably they know all this. I just wonder whether they actually understand the Isle of Man, but presumably they do. But it's been decided, Julian, that's what they say is going to happen.
Yeah, I noticed John also used the term, we need more tax receipt. That doesn't sound like things are going to get any cheaper then.
Well, I mean, the point he was making was very valid. He talked about the fact that public services have to be paid for. And, of course, the only people who pay for them are the taxpayers, the businesses and the individuals who generate their own revenue and are taxed on it by the government. And, of course, that comes back to everyone in public services, be it health service or, you know, social benefits, roads, the airport, stuff like that. That's the way that it works. So, I mean, it's quite right. We do need tax revenue.
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, the other mention was Jerby with the water. Well, that's fine. Although it would be nice to know exactly how many people they're talking about flooding Jerby with. I mean, I think the last census was 780 people. So how many do they think they're going to put up in Jerby? That's going to be a big increase.
Well, there's a lot of room there,
remember,
isn't there?
Well, yeah, but then that's part of the reason why people like it up there.
Of course.
But yeah. I noticed Kringle Reservoir has been offline for years, and it's full of water. And I think to remember that Bloor Reservoir, the treatment works were closed in 2005. So you've got two reservoirs full of water that are in use, which seems odd. If you know, if we've Phil mentioned yesterday about, oh, you know, we had this dry spring. Just recently, except, of course, if you go and have a look at Sam Turton's piece in the BBC last year, they said that it was the wettest 5 months since 1963 or something. So you can't have it always. I mean, unless you're going to say that global boiling is causing dry 1 year and pouring with rain the next, okay. You know, the previous year.
All right. Julian, it's good to hear from you.
Thanks
for being with us today. Just got a note, by the way, about the 20-mile-per-hour speed limit. The 20-mile-per-hour speed limit actually was approved in Tynwald in 2020 when Tim Baker was DOI minister. A speed limit of 20 miles per hour in residential areas can be rolled out on the Isle of Man after Tynwald backed a move to introduce the change. This is October 2020, following a debate. A new amendment calling for the change with caveats was unanimously supported. The Infrastructure Minister, Tim Baker, MHK, said it was a considered and collaborative approach to setting limits. And caller at MHK proposed the change, said it would give drivers more information about potential hazards. This is 2020, October 2020. The move would give Department of Infrastructure the power to set higher limits on some residential roads, including distributor roads. But Mrs. Corlett said lower speed limits gave road users information about the type of road they're travelling on and the likely hazards on it. The issue was originally debated in July 2020 when Bill Shimmins, MHK, called for a blanket 20 and 30 mile per hour limit on urban roads and narrow rural lanes. So, it's been around for almost 5 years.
Hi Liz, I see you've had your garage converted.
We're desperate for more room.
Yes, come through and have a look. John called Manx Property Conversions. We now have an extra bedroom, but it could be another reception room, kids' playroom or office. They also did our conservatory roof last year. We were so impressed, we got them back to convert the garage.
Wow, I need that. What's their number again?
Call MPC on 450500. That's 450500. Or find them on Facebook at Manx Property Conversions.
Suffering with joint pain or severe migraines? Whether it's from an injury or ongoing illness, you don't have to suffer in silence. The Crowther Clinic at Hospice Isle of Man in Strang offers expert private pain management tailored to you. And the best part? Every penny of profit goes straight to supporting free hospice care for our community. Take control of your pain and feel like yourself again. Visit crowtherclinic.im or call 647 450. Crowther Clinic. Private care with purpose.
Quadlock is the strongest and most secure mounting system in the world for integrating your phone, camera or accessories into your outdoor pursuits and for your car, van or motorhome. See the Quadlock display at H&H Motorcycles in South Key Douglas.
For the finest quality bespoke driveway gates on the island, it can only be Green Valley Farm Supplies.
Green Valley specialise in designing and crafting durable, bespoke driveway gates to your exact requirements, bringing functionality and sophistication to your home with a variety of styles, high-quality materials and finishes. Available supplied and fitted or supply only. For more information, just visit greenvalley.im. Green Valley Farm Supplies, for a gate that's uniquely yours.
Dr. Edward Fitzgerald is the Health Equity and Access Co-Lead at KPMG International and Head of Healthcare and Life Sciences at KPMG Islands Group. He talks to Agenda about healthcare policy and the policy differences of delivering health services in island situations. With spiralling health costs threatening the economic development of the island, he has some important lessons for us on how we can improve our health services and make them more affordable. That's Agenda this evening at 5:30 p.m. on Manx Radio with me, Phil Gorn. A useful dose of health policy medicine from the good doctor.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Norman's with us now. Hi, Norman.
Hello. I'm just hearing all this conversation you're having about wind farms and things.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not against renewable energies. If they're safe and they work and they don't put unaffordable costs onto people. But recently I've read more than once now about these articles about this. I think it was the first wind farm that they built in Australia. And now they are actually in the process, after 20 years, of dismantling it because it's come to the end of life. There's no way of recycling any of the materials. They've left with all this concrete infrastructure on the land. And, infrastructure left on the land. And there was something else I was going to mention, but I just can't think what it was.
So there's no way that they can break that concrete infrastructure up?
It hasn't. It's cost more than they've actually gained from it. They haven't what they've produced and the income they've produced it's cost more. The actual building and having the thing there has cost more than they've actually got back from it. And I just think, you know, you have to. This is what you have to be careful of. And I think I don't know what other people think. But
Normally it comes down to whether or not we trust our politicians and the people behind them, because this is different. This, you remember, we're an island. We've got nobody else to rely on for this. If it doesn't work, we're going to have to import electricity down that big pipe that costs a lot more than we pay for it at the moment.
Yeah. So I really don't know what the answer is, but. I mean, this may cost us a lot of money down. It may cost as much money as what's going to come down the pipe.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. So, I mean, in principle, what, are you for or against the onshore one down at Eristain on the offshore one, which is off the east coast?
At present, I would say I couldn't put my faith in any of them, I don't think.
Okay. All right. Norman, we appreciate it.
Yeah. Okay.
Good to hear from you. Thanks for calling today. And Chris is with us now. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Andy.
Yeah.
I got a question about energy security on the island.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of high-profile news over the last year or so about damage to subsea cables and pipelines, particularly in the Baltic.
Yeah.
Chinese ships and Russian ships dragging anchors and damaging subsea infrastructure. Our energy security at the moment depends on a gas pipeline that's running, I believe, from the UK to Ireland. And then we have a tee-off from that comes ashore in Kirkmichael.
That's right. It's actually owned by the Bord Gas in Ireland. It's the Irish. They own that pipe. And as you say, we got a junction off it.
Yeah, so it seems unlikely that anybody would want to target the Isle of Man, but you could target the Republic of Ireland, which would be a bigger target worth going after by damaging that pipeline, and we lose our gas supply at that point.
Interesting.
Now, reading the government's blurb about the turbines that we have at Pullrose, it suggests that they're able to run on light oil. I don't know whether that's aviation fuel or something else, as well as on natural gas. So from an energy security point of view, I'm wondering whether we do actually have a stock of oil that we can use in the event the gas supply is interrupted, and whether we actually test the turbines regularly to make sure we can make use of them in the event of a gas interruption.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, at the moment, we don't know how much of a threat it is. We hear from various governments and government agencies saying that, you know, these spy ships, and we had a spy ship, didn't we, around the Isle of Man recently. The Kantar was obviously surveying stuff, and I think that was really... There's a big Amazon wire that goes south of the Isle of Man. It goes, from, I think, from Denmark to Dublin because of Amazon in Dublin. So they'll be looking for that. We're just in the middle of it all, and as you say, we've got the gas pipeline off the north, and we've got the electricity interconnector off the south, and possibly another one that may come off the east as well. And nowadays, you don't need a big submarine to do this sort of damage. They can send underwater drones down to do this.
Yeah. So that's a question. I'll leave that open.
Well, it would be interesting to know. Well, in that case, let's pose that. Do we have a store of Avgas that could run the turbines in Paul Rose where it needed? All right. Thanks, Chris. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
And I think we've got Dewan with us now on Man in Light. Hi, Dewan.
Yes, Andy. So disappointed there. I think we've got Dewan with us now. Have you put your levers away, Andy?
They look very nice, Dewan. Very nice.
Back to normality. Picking up on Manx Radio article last week where they interviewed Charles Gard with reference to little team he was putting together to promote getting stuff done on the island. Did you read that one?
Yeah, I did. Well, yeah. It's like guerrilla gardeners, isn't it?
Yeah, and Charles was saying about this the other week. But I was just picking up on Ranald Caldwell's interview on that particular piece, where he cited tidying up the signage outside government buildings, the lettering. And I thought, really? Is that really a necessity? Did he have to say that? Of all the things that need tidying up on the island, to tidy the signage up at the front of government offices?
Well, obviously, he felt he needed to.
Obviously, he did. Obviously, he did. And I was slightly disappointed there. I thought we were going to do something. Maybe when Phil Gandy comes over next time. You know Phil Gandy has got the circus.
Yeah.
Maybe when Phil comes over next time, he can do a frontage there for the government buildings of a big top, can't he? And we can watch the clown show from Big Top. And we can have Alf Cannon on the Wheel of Death and Alex Allenson on the High Wire. And John Wernenberg can be selling windmills to children as he comes in. And you can put that top hat on, Andy, that you have at Timbald, and be the ringmaster.
Well, there. So, I mean, do you agree with Ranald Caldwell that if we had this citizens group that went around cleaning up stuff, that will be a good idea?
I absolutely totally agree with it. And I think you spoke about this before, about the work parties and the community service and the prison parties going out and doing stuff. I absolutely totally agree with it. And just on a point that someone said last week about the railings can't be replaced because they're plastic coated. Actually, when I was down watching the fireworks the other night, which was a really good display as it happens, I think, Kevin, have you seen it, Andy? But just opposite the Empress, they have been replaced. They're actually bars that have been replaced with proper metal that's just painted and uncoated. So the principle has been set there. They can be replaced. So there's no need for them railings to be left as they are. There is no need for them to be left as they are. And I know I keep going on about it, and it's a small thing, but it's right in your face thing. It's a right in your face thing. And that's why I was disappointed in Ranulf. Of all the things that he could have chosen, to have chosen the letters outside government building. The other thing there as well, I'm looking at the 525,000 to save 2.3 million, which shows that Tim Krukol brought that up last week. Well, if they've already identified that they can save 2.3 million, why are they spending 525,000 of taxpayers' money to save it?
I think it will be called a sprat to catch a mackerel, Jerry.
So I can think of something that mimes with sprat that's quite close. And the salary increase, we're now up to 526 million, 24-25, an increase of 124 million in government wages over 5 years. Am I reading that correct?
Something like that, I think.
For an 80,000 population. Wow. Wow.
Well, they're very clever people, Dewan.
But you keep saying this, Andy. I'm waiting to see the aspect of this happening. I'll leave that one with you for today, Andy.
Thanks for calling, Joe, and good to hear from you.
Bye-bye.
Join us at Riley's Garden Centre this Saturday for the Traeger Barbecue Demo Day from 11 a.m. See the grills, speak with the Traeger pros, and taste the wood-fired difference with lots of samples on hand. Become part of the Traeger Nation at Riley's Garden Centre this Saturday from 11.
What you got there, love?
Oh, 15 garden gnomes.
But we already have so many.
Yes, love. But this one is sitting on a toadstool and fishing. And this one is a limited edition. And this one is wearing lederhosen. And this one looks so cute. Just look at the nose on him. He's fabulous.
Bundle your mobile and broadband with Shaw and you could save £318. What would you spend it on? Visit shaw.com/bundle or see us in store. T's and C's apply.
Do you want to have your voice heard? The Isle of Man government wants to connect with you. Join the Chief Minister and the Council of Ministers at a roadshow event near you. Monday the 30th of June at Ramsey Grammar School. Tuesday 1st of July at Ballacameen High School, Douglas. Wednesday the 2nd at Castle Rushen High School. And Thursday the 3rd at Queen Elizabeth II High School, Peel. All events are from 5:30 until 8. And doors open at 5:15. You'll have the chance to meet ministers one-on-one, share your thoughts on national matters and take part in a Q&A session. We're listening to you. Register your free attendance at islandplan.in/roadshows.
People of the Isle of Man, are you thinking of buying or selling a home? Well, wait! You need to talk to the conveyancing team at LVW Law. LVW Law! They've over 20 years of experience and know what they're talking about. They're friendly and efficient. Do not buy or sell a property without calling LVW Law on 836757 for a no-obligation quote. LVW Law.
Radio Caroline North returns this weekend, giving you a chance to win one of three stylish, sunburst Les Gibson-style guitar wall clocks, complete with LED lights, in this month's competition. Our broadcast is sponsored by Turton Tower Woodland Cafe, so join us live from our historic radio ship, Ross Revenge, this Saturday morning, straight after Carnaby Street, on 1368 AM, on DAB, on smart speakers and online. It's Radio Caroline North.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Bonzo's with us now. Hi, Bonzo.
Hi there. Yes, just coming back on about government salaries and how they've risen. Well, first off, what's been inflation over the past 5 years? Cumulatively. I mean, you know, it hasn't been small, has it? And you have to remember that inflation, of course, adds on. As I say, it's cumulative year on year. So it's not just a question of, oh, it's 2% and then it's the 2% of the 2% that I was thinking about. It's, you know, not an arithmetic growth, it's whatever it is.
It's compounded.
Anyway, yes, compounded. That's what it is. Yes.
Anyway, you weren't calling about that.
Specifically looking for. Yeah, I wasn't talking about that. Taxes. Has he actually emailed a request to the minister herself for a meeting, rather than just putting her in a copy list of all sorts of Timwald officials and Timwald members and officials and whatever, and then sort of expecting a reply? Because the thing is, of course, Michelle Hayward in particular will probably have the most, you know, great big pile of email of any government minister, I should think, at the moment. And the idea that she's going to go through absolutely everything and then write replies, that's just unreasonable. But obviously I can hear, as I think everyone has, that there's considerable distress and concern about these things. So I think if he does, then just write to Michelle Hayward, anybody else, just email Michelle Hayward and request a meeting. I'm sure she'll probably arrange something with as much speed as she can.
Okay. All right. Appreciate it.
Okay, then.
Thanks. Good to hear from you.
Bye.
Thank you, Bonzo. 5-1 on Manx Radio. Tomorrow, we're talking medicine. Well, actually, the medical director of Manx Cares on, Chris Stockport. Dr. Stockport will be on. He leads and is the responsible officer for the Isle of Man's medical profession, which means ensuring high-quality clinical practice and delivery, monitoring, research and development, and also the medicines that we take. So we'll be able to hear, really, how Manx Care is doing. If you've got any thoughts on this, then the medical director from Manx Care, Dr. Chris Stockport, is on tomorrow. And this coming Friday, Douglas Central MHK, Chris Thomas is on Man in Line. Formerly Minister at the DOI, the dreaded DOI, formerly Minister for Policy and Reform. I say formerly because he's on the back benches now. So how will Chris Thomas see the Isle of Man financially and socially as well? And, more importantly, would Chris Thomas take a ministerial role in the 16 months between now and the general election? That's this Friday. Chris Thomas, MHK. You want to get a question in before then, by all means, you can do get in touch. The email address is maninline@manxradio.com, or you can leave a message on the answer phone, 682-631. The taxi rank opposite the bus shelters on Lord Street, never seen it used. Surely this can be utilised, Barry said. It is facing the wrong way, but point taken. Surely the government wants to use that field in Willesden for wagons. Now, 40 trees damaged in January need to be felled in the Willesden area. I'm suspicious, says Gaz. The TT wasn't what the people expected. The weather was terrible. There's nothing we can do about that, was there? I hope the team is proud of themselves, says Manx Will. When is a consultation not a consultation? When the DOI is doing it. Putting up 20-mile-per-hour signs in Onchan. Wind turbines delivered next. Well, remember, you got a chance to quiz the government coming up fairly shortly on later on this month. On the 30th of June, Monday 30th of June, you can meet, there's that Listening to You roadshow with the government, Monday 30th of June in Ramsey, Tuesday the 1st at Ballycomeen High School, Wednesday the 2nd at Castle Rushen in Castletown, and Thursday the 3rd at QE2 High School in Peel. More information at manxradio.com, and there's a link to sign up for tickets. That's it. So back tomorrow with Dr. Chris Stockport. Thanks to Howie on the phones today. WINT.